This is a memo to Barry Teicher in answer to a letter that we have been reading on and off for about 6 months while we debated what kind of answers we could best give you. Now we will.
I should say, instead of now we will. We have chosen.
Go ahead. All right.
I'll tell you.
This is from Mr. and Mrs. Irving Unger, who live at 336 Wellington Avenue, Chicago, Illinois, 60657.
Before I was Mrs. Irving Unger, I was Carlin Marie Strauss of Atlanta, Georgia. I graduated from Girls High School in 1931. My husband graduated from Lakeview High School of Chicago in the same year. We began as freshmen in the fall of 1931, but didn't meet until the middle of 1933. A historic time when Prohibition
was nearing its end
and the bank holiday began.
As you can see, in answer to your questions 1, 2, and 3, we did attend Wisconsin during 1933. We both graduated in 1935 and were undergraduates, and both left school after our graduation.
Turn it off.
Question 6, why did you select Wisconsin? I'll let Mrs. Unger answer.
It's too long and involved and unimportant, but I'm glad I did because I loved my 4 years at Wisconsin and ended up not only with a BA but with an MRS.
I picked Wisconsin because I was very much interested in journalism and advertising and did not want to go to Northwestern because that was in the Chicago area, so I went to the School of Journalism in Madison, majoring in advertising.
This is funny.
We'd like to cover some details of your questions from 14 through 16 and 17 to give you a little background of our memories. As far as dress, the men were dressed with shirt, tie, suit, no question.
Overcoat
in winter. Hat, usually. Blue jeans were unheard of. Slacks and a sport coat occasionally. But as to best of my recollection, I don't think I ever went to class without wearing a coat and a tie. As far as the ladies, I'll let Mrs. Unger.
Despite the weather and despite coming from Atlanta, I can never remember wearing anything in the nature of pants. If pants were available, we didn't have them. We wore dresses and coats with the collars turned up and put our heads down between our coat collars and ground our way down Langdon Hall and up Bascom Hill to classes. A little cold, but we made it.
As far as 19, to my recollection, all the classes were co-ed, and I recall no specific difference between the handling of women and men in any of the classes. The average lecture size in question 20, if it was a popular lecture, you had
such as Econ 1A with Professor Kiekhofer, you may have had as many as 500 or 600 in a class, but the quiz sessions were ordinary classroom size, perhaps 30 people in a group.
Yes. The Kiekhofer economics class was probably one of the most popular on campus, and everybody took it.
It was.
In addition, as far as popular professors, one of the most popular was Harry Harlow in the psychology department, who was working at that time and beginning his work with monkeys, which is now a nationally known research project. thing I remember about him was he gave simple, easy quizzes and always gave you the questions and the answers before the exam so that you had no trouble. I think we're both going to beg off on questions 24 through 28. I don't think either of us have any vivid or accurate memories of class behavior or attitudes in class.
Probably because everyone was well behaved. There was no such thing as putting your feet up on the desk in front of you or calling attention to yourself with smoking and use of alcohol. If there was, we were blissfully ignorant of it.
Go ahead and answer 41 and 42.
I can't say that Professor Charles Dobbins, if he was a professor, was of great influence other than the fact that he was handsome, young, and took us out of doors to conduct his English classes. It left an indelible mark, as you can see, since it's been in my memory going on 50 years. But as far as influencing, any influence, it probably wasn't there since I was a science major. Professors and lab instructors treated you with fairness. They were neither familiar nor unfamiliar to you. It was a regular teacher pupil. There was no opportunity to visit with them after classes that I recall. And our days consisted of going to classes and then goodbye to the teachers and going home and being with our friends or any after school activities in which we were interested.
To continue on 41 and 42, in the School of Journalism, we had several outstanding people, but by now they're just names. Grant Hyde, who was a professor and became one of the leading people. Curtis McDougall, who recently retired from Northwestern University, was outstanding. There were several others in the School of Journalism.
Helen White.
Who gave several classes in criticism, I remember vividly. But in many cases, then one in the economic school, Professor Robert Aurner, A-U-R-N-E-R, who taught letter writing, is one name that continues to stick in my memory. His specialty was business letter writing. And to this day, I can remember the class, even though I'm sure most of that writing experience has disappeared by now, as I no longer am in the advertising business. Please accept our apologies. 50 years is a long time to remember. We'll skip to questions 55 to 62. Regarding living in a fraternity and a sorority house, inasmuch as I lived in a fraternity and Mrs. Unger lived in a sorority house. At that time on the campus, I think it was a good decision. As I recall, your freshman year, you could not live in a fraternity or sorority house, so you lived in some type of off-campus living. And being from out of state, you could not live in the dormitories as they were restricted at that time to state students because of the very few dormitories on campus.
That might apply to men. I lived in Langdon Hall my freshman year and then moved to the sorority house in my second year, lived there for the two sophomore, junior, and senior years. It was very comfortable living.
We're talking about fraternities.
Right. Regarding 60.
You better plug it in if you're going to talk.
Oh. It's running. Regarding 60 and dinners, a typical dinner, as I recall, you sat at tables of six or eight people. Certain members of the fraternity did serve and work in the kitchen and help pay for their room and board that way. Food was served by the students, and the resident counselor, I cannot recall. What about the sorority house mother?
The sorority had a house mother who so-called presided at table. I think probably the most unusual memory that I have of eating at that time was because it was Depression time and because Wisconsin was a state which lived on cheese, it was required that cheese be served in some form every day in the house. And when we had jelly and cream cheese and crackers for dessert, it got to be a game because no one ever figured out how to come out even.
There were house rules. As I recall, in the fraternity house, no women above the first floor at any time. Dances were held in the house, and occasionally then a woman would get above the first floor, but it was very innocent. And I also remember that when Mrs. Unger had an appendicitis operation, I was given permission to go up and visit her on the second floor, and it created nothing but turmoil with girls having to yell ahead, "Man coming, man coming, man coming." A little different from today's rules, aren't they? Moving on to leisure time and question 63 and so on. Remember that part of the time when we were at school was during Prohibition. One of the great activities was to be sure you had a card for one of the 3, 4, or 5 famous speakeasies. One that I can still remember the number, and I wouldn't swear to it, but I think it was 614 Doty Street.
Our boundaries were Middleton, and it was considered quite a feat to go out to Frenchie's to eat. We had dances at the Maple Bluff Country Club and at one other. Do you remember, Irv, what it was? Nokomis Country Club. And that required renting a car from Cook's Rent-A-Car because there were very, very few students, at least in our crowd, who had a car. If you had one, it didn't do you much good because you couldn't drive it on campus except with special permission. And since none of us had a great deal of money, renting a car was in itself an event.
However, all of us remember in those days the fact that Cook, and it was spelled in those days K-O-C-H, had several lovely roadsters with rumble seats, so that you could put 4 and sometimes 6 people in them. The Union was popular. The Rathskeller, which of course did not serve beer because of Prohibition, was quite a hangout.
And it excluded women.
Yes, the Rathskeller was exclusively for men in those days.
But then a lovely place called the 770 Club,
770 Club, which was named for the address, opened up as a on-campus nightclub with a band and soft drinks. And as a sidelight, the leader of the band, Harold Platts, is still a friend of ours here in the city. Small worlds, isn't it? As far as I know, in answer to 66, there was really no restrictions to the access to the Union or other problems. Independents, Greeks, women, ethnic groups. I must confess, in 1931 to 1935, I don't think I knew what the word ethnic meant.
The only marching that I can remember was on May 1st when the lawyers and the engineers used to have their annual May Day parade. And supposedly they were rivals, but it was all in pretty good fun, and we used to go down to Lower Campus, which no longer exists, and watch them march down Langdon Street.
two other very popular places on campus at that time were Esther Beach and Hollywood, which were out on Lake Monona. Again, they required a car, but somehow we always managed to find somebody who could rent a car, or two, or three. And it was a dancing place with a good orchestra of that time. And it was, of course, we had rules. The girls had to be in the house by 12 o'clock, so it meant early evenings. In addition, of course, the Soda Campus Grill,
The Campus Soda Grill.
Correction. Campus Soda Grill was at Lower Campus. Lower Campus, to us in those days, was the area that started at the old main library. It was a large open area, went to a group of buildings across the street from the old Red Gym, directly opposite the Union. Most of this is now taken up, as I recall, by the new library, which of course did not exist. On Lower Campus, you played intramural baseball, you played touch football. A lot of intramural activity was taken up there. It was a gathering place. It was a cross section. It was comparable to what's called the Diag at the University of Michigan, or
the Midway at the University.
Midway
of
at
Chicago.
The University of Chicago. It was the gathering place. It was a boundary. It was the end of the campus and the beginning of town. Right at the end of this, away from the library, was the Campus Soda Grill, famous for milkshakes, famous for toast-twitch sandwiches, and hanging from the ceiling was one of the University of Wisconsin famous shells from their crew races. In answer to fads and hobbies, we're sitting here racking our brain. I don't really think we had fads, per se, that we can recall. There was a moderate amount of drinking. There was liquor brought into the fraternity houses because of prohibition. It was pretty vile stuff. There was spiked beer, which you got in the speakeasies, which was near beer, loaded with a shot of alcohol, called spiked beer.
If there were people who had dope, I never knew any of them. It just was something that I never would have thought of using, or knew anybody who would have thought of using. I guess we were a pretty square crowd.
Another very popular spot beyond the Campus Soda Grill was Geller's, which was a delicatessen, and the Chocolate Shop, which you went for candy and ice cream. Both of these were on State Street, and at that time the two major movie houses were the Capitol and the Orpheum, which were across from one another. In 68, Question 68, what book was everybody reading? I don't remember. Was this was pre Gone with the Wind, pre Forever Amber? I draw a blank on popular books or movies. The movie idols of those of that day. Again, a little difficult to sort out the dates. As far as radio shows, I think Amos and Andy were still holding their own. The Hit Parade.
The Metropolitan Opera broadcasts on Saturday afternoon.
The Clico Club Eskimos. The A&P Gypsies.
I'm beginning to think that we must have spent an awful lot of time studying, since leisure activities are hard to remember. I know we had a lot of fun. I enjoyed my 4 years, but trying to pinpoint how I enjoyed them is a little more difficult.
Let's skip to 72 and let Mrs. Unger describe a typical date. As I recall, you didn't go out for dinner because your dinner was always paid for at the fraternity or sorority house. The dates broke down into several things. One, of course, was you walked around the corner to the local movie and then went to the chocolate shop for a soda and back. If it was a big weekend and there was no parties, no fraternity, sorority dances, you might occasionally get a group together and go out to Hollywood or Esther Beach for an evening of dancing. It was very sedate. I don't recall during Prohibition anybody brought liquor. Fairly good amount of smoking. No dope. And what sex did take place on the campus was one of those things, if you heard about it, you didn't understand it. What do you want to add?
I can remember that we merely sat in the living room of the sorority house with other couples, engaging in conversation, and every so often the house mother would drift in and out. But I think we perhaps engaged in the lively art of conversation. Whose line is that, Art?
I forgot. I do remember at the fraternity house for a long time, four of us would have a bridge game. We played bridge for an hour almost every night, sometimes right after dinner, sometimes at midnight when you came back from your date.
Maybe that's what we did. Maybe we played bridge.
Could be. As far as 75, the big intramural sports were softball and touch football. As far as intercollegiate sports, this was the height of Wisconsin's power in basketball. It was the very end of Doc Meanwell's coaching season and preceding Bud Foster. Doc Meanwell was a world-renowned basketball coach, and the basketball team was outstanding. The football team was good.
Sometimey.
Was good and was bad. It was famous for a while because of a Hawaiian named Mickey McGuire who punted with barefoot. A large percentage of the campus did go to the football games.
And walked back to the campus from Camp Randall, right down University Avenue.
Following the band. Which was always better than the football team. Some other prominent athletes? Can't answer that. You occasionally took dates to sporting events, but what you also did if you were going with someone, you tried to arrange to get your seats together so that you sat together at the sporting events. The major sporting events of the year, probably the junior prom, the senior prom, and the military. Social events of the year. Junior prom, senior prom, military ball. Those were the three big, big social events.
We enjoyed concerts in the Stock Pavilion, accompanied by the mooing of the cows outside, but we did hear some beautiful music played in there. I believe they still use the Stock Pavilion for some of their events. The theater at the Union had not yet been built, so I guess our stage life was quite lacking.
As far as question 81 on a part-time job, both Mrs. Unger and I act as managers of our fraternity and sorority houses, which meant keeping the books, billing the students monthly, and in turn getting a high percentage of our room and board paid for. We worked with a local accounting firm, whose name I cannot remember, who did a lot of the work. But it meant keeping the records and worrying about the general operations of the house.
Finding girls whose rooms weren't kept neat. Now, isn't that a joke?
As far as question 82, both Mrs. Unger and I are Jewish. We were involved somewhat with Hillel, which was moderately active on the campus. And we did attend some religious activities there. And in both cases, both she and I belonged to a Jewish sorority and a Jewish fraternity. So the
if there was ethnicity on campus, there was a distinction between Jewish and non-Jewish fraternities and sororities. It was just an unwritten code. No one thought anything about it one way or another. And there was, I never encountered any anti-Semitism.
I didn't either. However, it was understood during rushing that if you were Jewish, you would be rushed by the Jewish fraternities. If you weren't Jewish, you wouldn't be. And at that time, we had at least 4, maybe 5 Jewish fraternities on campus and 2 Jewish sororities. In addition, of course, we had a large out-of-state population, and I can still remember that one year at our fraternity, Phi Sigma Delta, we played something like 18 or 20 people. 84. Rush was mainly a social invitation, and you went from house to house and met people. When you were finally brought in, there was a definite old-time fraternity hazing, including leaving people out in the middle of nowhere, including paddling. Very much old-time college activity, but I still remember driving freshmen out somewhere off of University Road, leaving them inside of a cemetery that they didn't know existed and hope they could find their way back. Going to
taking a
number 97. I remember Dean Goodnight. Scott Goodnight, who was Dean of Men. I succeeded in my first semester of being a typical freshman and being on the verge of flunking out, and I can remember going with one of our senior men from our fraternity who talked Dean Goodnight into keeping me into school.
The Dean of Women was Dean Troxell. I don't remember her first name, but the only occasion that I had to talk to her personally is I was very anxious to be a cheerleader, and I was told that I would have to talk to the Dean of Women. I went to see her, and she said, "We have no such thing as women cheerleaders. It isn't done." And no amount of plea bargaining, would change her mind. And that was my entire communication with Dean Troxell.
The other thing that Mrs. Unger can describe better than I can, this was a period of the experimental college, headed by Professor Michael John.
I was only involved in it tangentially, one of the men that I went with during my college time was roommate to Professor Micklejohn's son. There were four of them who had an apartment on Breeze Terrace. And in the course of my dating, I went out and studied with, and I mean, I really did study with those four young men. There were probably other women along too. But I do remember conversations about the experimental college, which ran, I think, from the mid-20s through about 1933 or 4. It really never got anywhere, but it was a wonderful idea, and I think probably blossomed at the University of Chicago under Robert Hutchins.
As 99, the president that we remember most vividly was Glenn Frank. I know that neither of us ever had any contact with him, but hearing him speak occasionally was a very thrilling thing to do. He was a brilliant man, was a big asset, and a very powerful national figure.
Probably the biggest mistake he made was to invite to be our commencement speaker the world's most boring Secretary of State,
Cordell Hull.
We graduated on a June day when the temperature must have been at least 125 degrees in the stock pavilion.
No, in the gym.
In the gym.
And his speech droned on and on for well over an hour. One of the other popular professors who paralleled Kiecofer in economics, but his field was political science, was Grayson Kirk, who later became president of Columbia and one of the famous educators of the time. His lectures were outstanding.
I attended a philosophy course given by marvelous Max Otto, whose lectures were always accompanied by cartoons that he drew on the blackboard. I still have the text which we studied with him called Things and Ideals, which has a cartoon in the front of it, the relation of man and nature, and shows a man running through a pasture being chased by a bull.
As far as the relationship we had with the merchants and the citizens of Madison, our contact with the citizens was very limited, with the exception of the few older fraternity sorority members who lived in Madison and acted as chaperones at dances. The majority of what shopping we did was done in the stores on State Street. One of the things I also remember, and surprised some of the young people when we tell them, was one of the things you did every week was you put all your laundry in a fiber box with straps. You took it to the sub-post office in the Rennebaum drugstore next to the Lawrence Cafe, and you mailed it home. And every week the box came back with your clean clothes. And that was...
Cost 30 cents,
and it took only one day to get to Chicago and 2 days to Atlanta. But I don't say everybody did, but a great many of them did, and frequently somebody would say, hey, you got the laundry to mail, I'm mailing some, let me have yours. And you all had these brown fiber boxes. There was no such thing as a laundromat. Yeah.
There were no facilities for doing laundry that I...
Yeah. The local, as far as cleaning your clothes, there were a couple of dry cleaning places on campus, and some of them picked up and delivered to the fraternity and sorority houses. And a few more quick reminiscences as we talk come back to us. The Brat House was a famous place for bratwurst and later beer when it became legal. And the Rathskeller finally did sell beer when Prohibition ended. But liquor was very limited on campus, even when it became legal.
was also limited by a lack of funds.
We were in school during the bank holiday when everybody ran out of money. If you had a $10 bill, you were a king.
Or a queen.
Or a queen. Because everything came to a, not quite a stop, but somehow we muddled through. I think the major effect, referring to question 102, that the Depression had on us, is a greater appreciation of money and of the fact that the bottom could fall out of anything. After all, in 1929 and 30, just before we both started for school, I know my father lost a big chunk of money because he had a lot of money in the stock market on margin. The same was true of my wife. On the other hand, we only paid as out-of-state students, I think $125 a semester tuition. But I can't remember what we paid for living, but it was quite economical.
Probably the reason that the Depression didn't have a profound impression on us at the time was that we were too close to it. Looking back on it 20 years later, we could see where it had a great deal more impact. But trying to explain it to our children and grandchildren is like they're trying to explain nuclear warfare to us. It's just that when you haven't experienced something, it's hard to imagine how it was. Likewise, we were very uninformed about what was going on in Europe, and after all, 1932, 33, 34, and 35 were very critical years. And yet, it's only as history is being replayed now that we seem to remember, yes, that did happen, but we didn't know about it at the time.
Answering question 104, graduating in 1935, my career goal was to pursue the advertising business. However, jobs were not that easy. I started out selling classified advertising door to door, and eventually wound up in an advertising agency. And after a series of changes, wound up in the selling field, where I still find my education does help. But it's a far cry from what I originally started out in the School of Journalism and in advertising. But I never regretted one minute of those 4 years in Madison, and both my wife and I are hoping anxiously to be back next year for our 50th. You want to say something?
My major, which was, as I have said before, in zoology and chemistry, really didn't equip me to be a lab technician, which was what I had in mind. So I went back to Atlanta and spent a year working in the Georgia State Board of Health, learning laboratory techniques. However, without the education and background which I obtained at the university, I would have been unable to do any kind of a job in a lab. I have practiced my trade somewhat during the intervening years. But more than anything else, I think that being at the University of Wisconsin, a long way from home, I learned resourcefulness. I made friends who are still our friends today. In fact, I think it might be worth mentioning that one couple whom we see quite frequently is a couple with whom we went all through the university, And we have marvelous memories of the days that we spent there. Perhaps they aren't as exciting as days at college are now, but they were very solid and instilled in us good habits and an appreciation of a good life.